Hello and welcome to our Financial Institution Podcast series at Aon. In this series, we check in with leaders from across Aon to get a quick take on the risk environment facing financial institutions and the intersection of those risks with the insurance capital markets. I'm Joel Sulkis, and I lead Aon's Financial Institutions Industry Practice. In today's conversation, we'll explore the risk environment facing banks and trading houses that finance and trade in the physical commodity space. In the current post-COVID recessionary environment that we find ourselves in, there's been disruption to commodity supply chains, while at the same time, there's been an enormous amount of fiscal stimulus deployed by governments through the banking system to enable financing activity to continue. The confluence of these events has led to a rapidly evolving risk landscape that banks and other financial institutions must navigate. Today, we'll talk with experts across Aon in the physical, cyber, fraud, and credit insurance markets. Joining us today is Ruger Vanderhoven, who heads our commodities practice based in Amsterdam, Andrew Mahoney, who leads our FI cyber team in Singapore covering APAC, Adrian Smith, a senior member of our financial lines team in London, and Beverly Marsden, who heads our credit solutions practice covering the commodity space in London as well. So welcome to the program, everyone. So Ruger, if you're a bank or you're a trading house providing financing, whether that be true sale financing or more traditional lending to the commodity space, what did the risk environment look like pre-COVID and what does it look like now?
Yeah. So the risk prior to COVID was relatively well under control and traders were faced with risks they understood well, and the trader was also able to sell off this risk to the insurance markets. The caveat to this is perhaps on cyber risk and fraud risks. Particularly on the latter, we have simultaneously seen an increase in fraudulent cases whilst the insurance market was restricting cover for traders to protect against this risk significantly. Post-COVID, there are two main risks that have increased. Not surprisingly, we see a deterioration of counterparty risks due to the corona pandemic, caused by most countries locking down and economic development slowing down. Secondly, we can monitor the impact via the cargo insurance programs. As these programs are most adaptive to shock changes such as the pandemic, it provides us with some good insights. When we look at the claims made under the cargo policies, we don't see a significant increase. Also, with regards to supply chain disruptions or delays, apart from some hiccups at the beginning of the pandemic, we don't see major issues. We do, however, see a difference in level of activity. For instance, our agri clients remain rather active, whilst clients in other segments, especially in metals, are less active compared to the pre-COVID-19 period. There is, however, a significant difference still in slowdown between various metals commodities also. One thing we do feel is very important to point out, and this ties in with our earlier remark on fraud risk. Due to travel restrictions and closed borders, it continues to be challenging to send people out to check whether the commodities are really loaded on a vessel or stored in a warehouse. Specifically, the lack of checks during storage is worrying. Reliable checks remain the most important tool for a trader to avoid fraud in the chain, particularly when less familiar storage facilities are being used.
So Ruger, as our financial institution clients in this space think about the challenging risks that you just touched on, you know, it's important to emphasize that the insurance markets don't always design their insurance products in the same way that our clients think about their risks. So as we represent our clients in the insurance markets, it's really our responsibility to think across a client's risk profile and to make sure that we're structuring coverage that dovetails across different insurance products and solutions. So maybe starting with the risk of physical loss to commodity inventory that may be on a bank's balance sheet, what are some of the key physical risks that our clients need to think about, and how broad are the insurance markets in this regard?
This is a most relevant question, and the word physical here is key, particularly on the marine cargo product. So for banks that have a financial interest in transactions with physical commodities or even own commodities, the marine cargo insurance market has always provided excellent opportunities to mitigate most of the risks, like natural catastrophes and thefts. These are still some of the main risks when dealing with physical commodities, and the marine cargo insurance market is still the place for these risks. However, there are some limitations. First of all, the market is restricting cover on misappropriation. To clarify this with misappropriation, I am talking about a theft-like situation in which participants in the sales transaction, like buyers or sellers, or participants in the logistical chain, for instance, warehousekeepers, use or sell commodities without permission of the owner and without providing financial compensation. During the past years, we have seen a very clear trend in which insurers are limiting cover for misappropriation. Banks and traders alike will have to deal with that by setting up risk management programs and to keep discussions with insurers ongoing. Having the insurance markets understand what a financial institution is doing to mitigate risks is key in extending the scope of cover. There is, however, a hard stop for the marine cargo insurance market when we are dealing with document fraud cases with non-existing commodities. The reason is that a marine cargo insurance policy only provides cover for loss of or damage to physical goods. So the actual existence of the commodity is the starting point. And when there is no commodity, there is no protection under the marine cargo insurance. This is a serious gap between real life problems and the current marine cargo insurance product. Luckily, we see that other parts of the insurance industry are picking this up, and new insurance products are developed, like the commodities document fraud policy.
So Adrian, pivoting over to you, can you please give us a bit of the background on this commodities document of title fraud insurance product that Ruker just mentioned, as it's a relatively new product in the London market? What is its intended scope of protection, and what prompted its recent development?
Well, whilst cover of this type has been absent from the crime insurance market since around the 1980s, it was really the events at Qingdao in China in 2014, where metals worth about $380 million were used to obtain around $4.2 billion in financing. That really sort of got everyone thinking and talking about these issues again. And not long after Qingdao, there has emerged another warehouse fraud in the Asian metals industry, this time involving the Access World nickel warehouse receipts. And very recently, we have discovery of fraud involving Hing Long Trading in Singapore, which owes about $3.5 billion against assets of only $257 million. Again, we've seen the falsification of documents, including bills of lading, obtaining of credit on non-existent inventory, and the sale of the same inventory to multiple parties. So we're seeing fraud risk involving commodities documents becoming higher profile and involving significant monetary amounts, involving the same types of fraud. And it's kind of against this backdrop that we're currently developing and expanding an insurance market to protect companies against these risks. From a scope of protection perspective, the cover itself is actually quite simple. You know, as the name of the product suggests, we're dealing with the risk of fraud involving commodities documents, be they physical or be they electronic. By fraud, we mean forging signatures, counterfeiting and fraudulent alteration, through to fraudulent obtaining, issuance, or reissuance of these documents. Usually for an insurance policy, there are actually very few exclusions in the product, which again makes it quite simple in terms of coverage. The important aspect of the coverage is to fill in the gaps between the traditional loss or damage cover for physical commodities and the traditional financial institutions, you know, fidelity or crime bonds, which historically have not had any appetite for insuring commodity-related transactions.
So Adrian, you know, contemplating some of the recent fraudulent activity that you just mentioned, maybe could you please describe the breadth and the scope of the insurance markets as it pertains to document of title fraud coverage? What are you seeing in the markets now by way of market appetite to write this coverage?
Whilst commodities document fraud insurance product was initiated and developed here in London, we are looking to access insurer capacity on a global basis. Current total market capacity for this insurance product is around the $100 million mark. We're hoping to increase this as we develop further, but that's sort of where we are at the moment. And it's too early to judge the effect that COVID pandemic it's going to have on this sort of nascent insurance market for commodities document fraud. But we have recently been through the renewal of the biggest program of this kind in the market. And whilst this was ultimately a successful renewal, it wasn't without significant challenges, both from a pricing perspective and a capacity perspective. A lot of insurers felt that the COVID pandemic has served to increase the level of risk amounts around document fraud, mainly due to the fact the insurer is not able to physically carry out routine inspections. As such, their controls and procedures were compromised. As a result, insurers were initially seeking quite substantial premium increases over prior years. We saw about 3 out of 13 of the incumbent insurers reducing their capacity on the program. We had to approach 5 new insurers in order to get 1 new carrier onto the program. Some of the potential new insurers we spoke to simply felt it not seemed to be a good time to write a product they had little experience of in a challenging sector that was experiencing increased levels of fraud. The client had to provide a lot of information around how they were dealing with COVID, the impact on their control and procedures. And additionally, a lot of information around details of how the trading volume had changed, the amount of commodities held, and number of locations. Having said that, with a lot of work, we did manage to maintain the program limits at the same level as previous and without any new restrictions on coverage.
So it sounds like, despite the challenging environment, a decent result on the most sizable program in the market.
Very much so.
So Adrian, for clients that may be interested in exploring this new product, Adrian, how would you counsel them to prepare for underwriting discussions and to most effectively differentiate themselves in this underwriting environment?
Well, I think it's very important for clients to be prepared for the process here. This isn't like buying motor insurance. You don't sort of fill out a proposal form and click on a button and bind your policy. The usual starting point for this will be answering a number of fairly basic questions around the size of your commodities business, the products that which you deal, the geographies in which you operate, the controls you have in place, that kind of thing. We at Aon then use that information to begin canvassing the global market and assemble sort of potential insurers for a more in-depth fact-finding meeting or a call. From there, there may well be the provision of further information required before we can proceed to the formal quotation stage. Whilst factors such as volumes, products, and geographies are important here, the key factor will always be controls. The clients who get the best deals from the market will always be those that can best demonstrate they are aware of their risks and have in place controls to mitigate those risks as far as reasonably possible. Examples include details of the client's vendor onboarding process, their risk rating assessment of warehouses, segregation of inventory, the approval process for physically moving commodities, process of issuing warehouse receipts, oversight of storage facilities, that kind of thing.
Got it. So maybe now pivoting to the cyber and the technology end of the risk spectrum. So Andrew, what are you starting to see in terms of this pandemic acting as an accelerant of client digitization strategies? And what are the new associated risks that clients are facing in the commodity space?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to note that even before this period, there had been a significant shift across most industries towards digitization, automation, connectivity. Now, obviously, COVID has accelerated that journey. That's been largely a good thing. One of the silver linings of this period has been just how much business has been able to continue because of the technological advances that have been made, particularly when it comes to working from home. But that brings with it increased risk. And so on the one hand, we've seen an increased reliance on technology and therefore an expanded attack surface, particularly as we see the use of personal devices increasing. And on the other, there's a notable uptick in malicious cyber traffic. Hackers have been, since the start of the pandemic, looking to take advantage of this period. This puts pressure on the technology as well as the human element. Employees accessing slow internal systems will begin to store more sensitive data locally. Social engineering attempts will be harder to detect when you don't have a second pair of eyes to identify an attack. Those risks, we don't see them as stopping the transition to digitization. It just means that there needs to be, I think more than ever, a focus on improving cyber resilience. Now, in the commodities space, this might hasten the transition towards using a sort of centralized digital platform, perhaps underpinned by blockchain, in order to counter some of that fraudulent activity that's been discussed already, particularly around things like warehouse receipts and stock inventories. But it's important that blockchain is not viewed as the panacea for all fraudulent activity. As we've seen in the crypto space, hackers have adapted to new technologies and found ways to manipulate distributed ledger technology. So commodity traders also need to be aware of what the insurance market can offer to address an evolving risk profile. There won't necessarily be a single product that addresses each exposure. The key, I think, is to have awareness around what can be covered and to have a skillful advocate negotiating for cover on your behalf and structuring policies to efficiently and effectively address those risks.
So Andrew, the cyber product, it's an interesting insurance product in that it provides a variety of both first and third party protections. Could you briefly describe its key coverage features that commodity traders or financiers should be thinking about in this environment?
Yeah, well that's it's a good characterization to call it sort of first and third party cover. So first party being the expenses incurred in dealing with a cyber event, business interruption losses, even ransom payments, and the third party being liability that arises from cyber events. Now that's typically liability arising from a breach of personal data, but it's important, particularly in the commodity space, to note that there is a liability insuring clause for losses that arise from network security failure generally. So that might be one of the areas of cover that you want to ensure has sufficient breadth to meet your sort of business needs. More recently, I think business interruption cover for cyber events has been probably the main driver for purchasing cyber insurance, perhaps with the exception of those companies driven by EU GDPR. And this business interruption cover is really an area that should be in sharp focus in the commodity space, particularly because there are multiple moving parts to the coverage around what triggers it, what's the waiting period and the indemnity period, how the loss is calculated, for example. And the final area I'd say to look out for is trading exclusions. Now, they are common in cyber policies and the standard language can be broad. So left unchecked, an exclusion like that could really render the policy redundant for a commodities trader. But reasonable insurers will recognize this, recognize how it shouldn't apply as broadly in the commodity space, and they'll narrow the operation of that exclusion.
So Andrew, the cyber insurance market had remained somewhat competitive heading into COVID. What would you say is the state of the cyber markets now?
Yeah, so prior to the pandemic, we had seen early signs of market hardening, and that obviously shows no signs of abating. There's only more of a need for the cover and more claims being reported. Loss ratios have been sustainable, but the claims growth is outstripping the premium growth at a concerning rate, and the market has also seen some large claims recently. And there's no evidence to suggest that cyber losses or cyber events are becoming more manageable. Now, there's considerable variation across regions and sectors, but for financial institutions and those companies which are associated or adjacent to financial institutions, including those in the commodity sector, we do expect to see rate increases. The good news, I'd say, is that despite challenges on the pricing and to some degree the capacity side, we do continue to see coverage improvements on the most part, which indicates that insurers remain invested in growing cyber insurance and meeting client needs, provided the numbers make sense.
Okay. So Beverly, up to this point in the discussion, we focused on some of the key operational risks facing banks and trading houses that are providing TruSale financing in the commodity space. But these clients also face credit risk in the case of more traditional lending structures or the advancement of payment terms. What is the breadth of the non-payment insurance solutions available to these financial institutions that are extending credit into the commodity sector?
Well, Joel, it really does depend on whether commodity financiers are arranging insurance for their own account or as a loss payee under a trader's policy. But essentially, financial institutions are seeking to protect disbursements, which are made under a trade finance loan facility or a prepayment made under a pre-financing agreement in relation, again, to an underlying trade. But all policies for our non-payment insurance are bespoke in our class of business, which basically means they are tailored to the individual transaction. But typically, the most appropriate insurance solution available to a bank is a comprehensive non-payment policy, as the coverage is really broad. And triggers for indemnification under the policy range from insolvency and protracted default only, but also through to non-payment or non-performance of counterparty obligations. The latter would include defaults under the contract due to a political risk event, for example, a currency moratorium or a trade embargo. Other non-payment insurance solutions out there for trade financiers include those which can help mitigate against the risk of an issuing bank defaulting on a letter of credit issued, and this would be under a specific trade contract or a trade facility. As a consequence of increased commodity price volatility, a growing area of interest amongst our traders and their financiers has been securing mark-to-market. This is a form of non-payment cover, which protects against a resale loss following a contractual default under a trade contract.
So, Beverly, this market has been not only impacted by the pandemic, but has also been impacted as a result of recent volatility in oil prices. Could you describe the state of the credit insurance market at this point in time, contemplating this confluence of challenging events?
Sure. I mean, within the first few weeks of the pandemic, the UK credit insurance market was in a state of paralysis following a wave of nationwide and global risk actions from credit insurers. And I guess this kind of knee-jerk reactive approach was akin to the behaviour we saw from insurers at the beginning of the global financial crisis of 2008. Some comparisons have been made to that. But with liquidity of counterparties being a primary concern, credit limit reductions were subsequently applied across all industry sectors, but mainly focused on the worst affected sectors such as retail and aviation. As the situation has matured over the last couple of months, several governments have announced state support for the trade credit insurance market. Credit limit reductions have reduced, allowing insurance capacity to remain in the markets. I think we can now say with a degree of confidence that the market is functioning again, albeit most insurers are still in first gear. Whilst insurers are, and I quote, cautiously open for business, appetite for risk remains selective, with no immediate pressure on insurers to generate premium and hit budget. There is most certainly a flight to quality, with underwriter appetite reserved almost exclusively for existing insureds and investment-grade obligors. As a consequence, less business is being transacted in our markets, and there are less insurance policies being issued right now. Whilst there are a plethora of claims notifications in our space, we are unlikely to see any hard data before the last quarter of 2020. But clients and new prospects should expect increased scrutiny on all their risks, with insurers demanding information on the performance of existing contracts, as well as details of future COVID contingency plans, for example, how supply chains will operate should another physical lockdown occur. I guess from a macroeconomic perspective, the sharp decline in oil prices which occurred before the pandemic has helped create the perfect storm in our markets. Depressed oil prices continue to have a negative effect on those countries that export the product, whilst oil-consuming economies may benefit significantly, and we have seen examples of this. There will be winners and losers here, Joel. However, we're beginning to witness a bounce back in pockets of the oil trade and commodity sector.
And Beverly, if you're a bank or if you're a trading house that is not currently a user of credit insurance, what does the adoption process typically look like? How long does that take? And how can traders and lenders differentiate themselves through the underwriting process?
I think it very much depends on the rationale for approaching the credit insurance markets. But we are seeing new prospects coming to market who are looking for ways to achieve greater capital efficiencies, and this is actively encouraged. A bank or trading house with no prior experience in the credit insurance space will probably need to consider the utilization of credit insurance in a more strategic way. For example, sharing the good counterparty risks with insurers, as well as the more challenging and considering a higher level of risk share to evidence a bank is comfortable to have some skin in the game. All of this is very attractive for insurers right now and will help to establish the foundations for a long-lasting partnership. Evidence of due diligence is a key differentiator in our game. A new entrant to the credit insurance market, such as a bank, would usually provide a full presentation to insurers. Naturally, this would include key elements such as their corporate strategy and vision, activity focus, and countries in which they operate. Details of a bank's own onboarding process with regards to customers, together with a summary of their approach to credit risk management, for example, is very useful for insurers. Full disclosure and transparency to help insurers understand what a bank or a trading house is doing to anticipate and mitigate risk is a key differentiator in the underwriting process. Allied to this, the ability to demonstrate a solid knowledge of the business and their customer base will help provide the competitive edge required in the current market environment. Assuming our insurers can get comfortable with either the bank or the trading house as a new user of credit insurance, we would not expect the adoption process to take between 6 to 8 weeks.
So Beverly, before we wrap up our conversation, and maybe on the less technical side of the way the markets are operating, maybe you can provide our listeners with a bit of an overview of how the insurance markets are actually functioning these days. We know the insurance market and the industry is very much a relationship face-to-face business. So how are clients and underwriters adapting in this new environment?
Sure, no problem, Joel. I mean, based on what we have seen over the past 4 months, I think clients and insurers have adapted well to the new way of working and interacting with one another. Apart from the obvious efficiency gains in terms of time and cost to the business, we might argue that remote working technology has so far proven successful in enabling us to stay connected with our clients and prospects. Based on our experience, it's working particularly well with our core clients, where there is already a good rapport. The WebEx approach, which often tends to be slightly more casual than a traditional client meeting, it can be quite beneficial, in fact. In these smaller, more familiar meetings, there is usually a lot more knowledge sharing going on, which can be very productive, and it allows us to keep our finger on the pulse of what is happening. Say, for example, in the commodity space, where news or updates on a client's business activity normally takes a little longer to reach our ears. Lloyd's insurers have shown immense resilience since the lockdown period began. As one of our more traditional institutions, Lloyd's of London thrived on the face-to-face contact with its brokers. The electronic trading platform that brokers, and indeed some insurers, were initially reticent to use, has very quickly and almost seamlessly become the norm. So I guess the question that one should pose next is the new normal now the new better?
Well, we will certainly have to see. Well, that's a wrap for our discussion today. I want to extend a big thank you to Ruger, Adrian, Andrew, and Beverly for spending time and sharing their market insights with us today. Thanks very much, all.